Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible.
Has there been a point in your journey where you felt like giving up?
Daily, you know, yeah. I mean, but very short-lived. Yeah. I had the curse of you just, I couldn't quit.
Now on to the show. On the show today, we have SRM's very own Larry Pruss. He is here talking about how SRM has responded to the Federal Reserve, FDIC, and OCC's joint statement that has expressed the agency's concerns about financial institutions, credit unions in this case even, that have business dealings tied to digital assets, which includes cryptocurrency. So really fascinating stuff here from Larry as usual, and hope you guys check it out. On today's program, we have SRM's very own Larry Pruss. Larry, how are you, sir? Good to see you again. I was about to say Happy New Year. Good to see you, but how about that too?
Happy New Year and great to see you indeed, Mike.
Good to have you back here today because obviously because you are in the world of digital assets pretty deeply these days, and your job must be quite the adventure, as we were talking before the recording. So that's kind of a roundabout way of talking about today's topic, which is the Federal Reserve and the Federal Comptroller of the Currency's joint statement. The FDIC and the OCC, all these guys, they all did a joint statement together and kind of expressed their concerns about financial institutions dealing with digital assets, especially cryptocurrency, based on all the things that have happened in the last few months. And so you guys at SRM responded to that as well. But I want to talk about just initially give us an overview of this joint statement of these three entities here and what its meanings are.
Yeah, it was really a shot across the bow for crypto companies, but also a word of warning for banks. And obviously we're talking to credit unions, but as I tell all of our credit union clients, this is very applicable as well, because the things that they called out in the industry were legitimate concerns. And, you know, a lot of this was a result of a terrible 2022 as it relates to digital assets. So we saw an awful lot of bad news reports. Now, the good news was we continued to build and there's a lot of engagement and a lot of new launches. But like just listing some of them, we had obviously the recent FTX collapse, there's $8 billion in missing funds. Sam Bankman-Fried is in custody. Yeah. You know, Congress has already had a couple of testimonies around it. So, I mean, FTX was kind of to wrap up the year. Earlier in the year, we had Terra Luna, which was a $60 billion failed experiment of an algorithmic stablecoin. We saw bankruptcies of Celsius, Three Arrow Capitals, BlockFi, Digital, Voyager Digital, and a bunch of others. And then, you know, the usual amounts of hacks and scams. So it was not a surprise at all to see the banking folks come out, the regulators come out with some recommendations. I think the good news from those recommendations is that all of them can be addressed by the industry. All of them should be addressed by the industry. Mm-hmm. And I've got it here. I'm just going to read a couple of these. I mean, the first one was frauds and scams run by crypto industry participants. I mean, they're in our industry at this point, we should not allow for that. There should be no reason for that. I mean, yes, we need to have enforcement of existing laws to kind of crack down on that. And I think we'll see the regulators get better with that.
Yeah.
Frauds and scams, I mean, it's a new technology. It's a complicated technology. Not surprising, but at this point, we're a mature enough industry. I think we need to get a handle on those.
Completely.
The other was uncertainties the surrounding legalities in regards to asset custody, redemption, ownership rights. We just saw something recently in the news from Celsius about users' funds being the assets of Celsius. And part of it had to do with the way that it was disclosed, but I'm sure those users were hoping that they would be able to get their money back and kind of be first in line as a creditor in bankruptcy proceedings. Well, that's not going to be the case. And so there is always confusion around as it relates to the custodial relationship. Who owns the funds? Does the customer or the member own the funds? Mm-hmm. Or does the custodial agent own the funds? Some of that is going to be worked out in a number of bankruptcy courts currently working, or a number of bankruptcy proceedings currently working their way through the courts, but we'll get answers on that. They also called out misleading representations and disclosures, particularly around FDIC insurance. That's an easy one to fix. And part of it is, you know, the crypto industry is largely built by people in fintech, not people from traditional finance or TradFi. We are starting to see more people move from TradFi to, you know, DeFi and centralized finance and crypto finance. And so I think that will get better over time as those folks understand disclosures and why that's important. But that's another one they called out. Volatility in the crypto markets, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. It's a volatile asset class. Volatility around stable coins would certainly be a concern. Most stable coins, at least the ones that are remaining, are fairly stable and haven't lost their peg in the, none of them recently, at least. But that volatility is part of it being a small asset class and being a speculative asset. So that's a fair call out. It's not one that I know we can address. Susceptibility to stable coin to stable coin runs can kind of run on the banks for a stable coin. I mean, outside of Terra Luna, and that was a unique situation, and then I think Tether momentarily lost its peg a little while afterwards. The better stable coins, the Paxos, the Circles of the world, have been very stable and haven't lost their peg. I can make an argument there's probably less chance for a run on the bank on, you know, for stable coin than you would see for a traditional financial institution. But it's really very dependent on, are those underlying collateral backed 100% one for one with US dollars or newer cash equivalents? If they are, there's no need for a run on the bank as long as there's full redemptions and you can get it in a certain amount of time. There's concern about contagion within the sector, so kind of spillovers to traditional finance, lack of maturity around risk management, governance practices, and then lack of regulations and standards. Again, all of those are things that can be addressed. And so, you know, we hope, certainly hope the crypto industry will do that. What we did is we responded to that letter, that joint letter that was put out, because we thought it was important for our clients to understand what that means, and that it was a shot across the bow to the crypto firms. But for traditional finances, a couple of things that you can do.
Sure.
First off is really be mindful of the risks, meaning that, you know, we need to put a lot more effort around due diligence of digital asset vendors. Probably a couple of days after that paper came out, I wrote a draft policy for our clients around managing digital asset providers, in particular those custodial arrangements, to ensure those custodial funds, if they say they are there, that they are actually there. So better due diligence around those partnerships, implementing good security protocols. I mean, we're going to have to spend a lot more time making sure that those underlying assets are as safe as we think that there are, and there aren't backdoors like we might have seen recently with FTX. Having the proper risk management protocols and procedures, providing, you know, member education, clear disclosures. Those are all things that can go a long way to making sure that, you know, none of our traditional finance players get in trouble when partnering with a third party vendor. And so we're going to continue to kind of expand on that. But those were the things, was really kind of be mindful of the risk. You know, leverage a third party to help out. We are extremely passionate about this space. I literally dream about digital assets. I think about 24/7. I take my clues not just from kind of the credit union industry, but what the Bank for International Settlements is doing, Singapore Monetary Authority, other central banks around the world, our own Fed. And so I take clues from that. And this is really a tough area to keep up with. So, you know, get a partner who's on top of this, can help you think through some of these complexities. And then obviously continue to monitor communication from these agencies, because, you know, they're not putting this out there just because they want to. They're putting this out there as a reaction to something in the market. And they want the industry to pay attention and make a response.
Yeah, it seems like the last couple of years in the digital asset space, probably longer than that, maybe. I mean, I'm not an expert. Obviously, you are, but it's just seemed like the Wild West. And it sounds like 2023 may be the year of the regulation, in this area to kind of tame that Wild West, if you will. So, I mean, I don't know. You look a bit.
I would have agreed with you, except for the way the midterms worked out in this recent kind of kerfuffle in the House with getting their speaker elected. I think it's going to be a tough year, 2023, to pass any new legislation through, even though there was some bipartisan agreement going into the new year. I've got a sneaking suspicion we probably won't get legislation around digital assets. We might see something on stable coins, but the rest of it, I think we're probably going to be out a while.
Oh, goodness. So is that good news or bad news for financial institutions, credit unions in this case? Because it
depends on how you look at it. Industry in general has never been really great at self-regulation. Yeah, I think the existing regulators and existing enforcement mechanisms are going to have to be kind of better applied. The SEC is probably going to have to get more involved. The CFTC is going to have to get more involved. I mean, just having a better understanding of who has what regulatory oversight of what type of tokens would be useful for this space. I'm hoping that the digital asset industry starts to self-regulate. I kind of think that they won't. My biggest concern is I don't want to wake up one day to a news article where there is a financial institution that has had a problem with a digital asset vendor. Like, that would be my nightmare. So we do everything we can to ensure that those partnerships are fully vetted and have been with people who either are new in the industry and understand it and understand the complexities and the regulation and the licensing requirements, or are older established players like a Bitstamp that has been, crypto exchange that's been around for 11, 12, 13 years. Yeah. And, isn't going anywhere and is looking to get into financial services space. So we're really trying to make sure that the partnerships that we bring to the table have at least been fully vetted, and then let our partners kind of choose what's needed from a product member standpoint.
Right. And wouldn't some sort of regulation, even if it's self-regulation, wouldn't that cause more people to draw closer to it as opposed to right now? Because I think a lot of people are very fearful of cryptocurrency, just as an example. And then, a lot of people that may have gone in when it was really good and then it kind of crashed and we're kind of in this crypto winter, as they're calling it. I think a lot of people are scared to death of going in it right now, especially what happened with FTX and that type of thing. So if you can somewhat legitimize it and make it normal is a word that comes to my brain, but I don't think that's the right word, but to normalize it somehow would attract more people to it. And then it would flourish even more so than it did probably last year. So that's just kind of my thought. That's my thought.
Yeah. The problem is there's some folks in Congress, particularly on the Senate side, that don't want to pass legislation because they do fear that it would legitimize it. And they are so anti-crypto and so anti-digital asset space.
Really?
They'd rather not have any regulation, which I think terrible.
I do too.
Terrible approach.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of whether or not your average retail investor is concerned about going back into the space because it's unregulated, I think it has more to do with kind of economic cycles and traditional digital asset cycles than anything. The clients that we deal with, banks and credit unions, mm-hmm. Yeah, regulation is very important. But for the average retail investor, they see the FTX as a world. But if you've been around digital assets long enough, we've been through about four or five of these cycles. And they all feel the exact same thing. Right before it gets better, it feels like it's the end of the world and there's been scams and frauds and collapses, right? Because anytime you have a drop in prices, anyone that's doing anything sketchy is going to get it. You're going to get exposed. It was the same with traditional finance in 2008. With Bernie Madoff. I just watched the Bernie Madoff thing on Netflix, so it was fresh on my mind. But, if you have a bunch of redemptions and you're running a Ponzi scheme, well, you're going to get discovered. And so that always happens at every one of these kind of ends of this bull run, or end of a bear market, and then we'll be back in a bull run at some point. So I tell people, keep building, try not to get too distracted by the new headlines. Right. We need to work to make sure that the industry continues to have safe and sound practices, that partnerships are good partners, and do our best to encourage the crypto industry to kind of learn from traditional finance and not be so wild west, so to speak.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, this is a fascinating topic, and I'm almost jealous that you're so deep into it that you get to like see it so up close. But that's why I turn to folks like you, Larry. He's like, all right, what's going on now? So yeah, so based on what we just talked about, what advice do you have for credit unions out there and serving their members in this area right now, for especially in 2023 when there's still going to be a lot of change going on? Any advice or any tips or anything like that?
So what I would say, I can make an argument to either not get into this or to get into this. We don't encourage our clients either way. We take the approach that this is technology. Now, technology is good and technology ultimately wins at the end of the day, but are offering the ability to buy, sell digital tokens for your members a good or bad thing? We don't really take a position on this. What I can say is that had a number of credit unions had that as an option to be able to buy, sell, and hold digital assets, there's a whole bunch of members that might have been with their credit union instead of FTX and would not have got burned.
Precisely.
So, you know, credit unions can assure at least that their partnerships and what solutions they're offering are going to be legit. They can still be highly speculative, but at least they're legit. And you know, what we saw last year was a lot of new entrances into the market, but a lot of them were fairly simplistic and for a lot of good reasons, but a lot of them were Bitcoin-only offerings. Mm-hmm. And what my concern was is that would encourage necessarily new people into the market, but for those that had been working with a Binance or a Coinbase or, God forbid, an FTX, you weren't going to win them back necessarily with a Bitcoin owning the offering. So was it really a competitive enough project offering? Would the prices be competitive not enough? I was worried about credit unions competing on price and product functionality. Now that FTX has happened and we had enough of these failures, they don't have to compete on product and price anymore. All they have to compete on is their advantage, trust.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can offer a trusted product through the credit union, I think they can win that race. And winning that race means bringing all of those deposits back that they saw go off to the digital asset exchanges over the last 2 years, bringing them back on. And it gives credit unions an opportunity to learn about this because, you know, in 18 months, 24 months, 36 months, we are going to see the continued digitization of the dollar. And whether it's private cryptocurrencies or tokenized deposits or stable coins or central bank digital currency, I don't know what's going to win at the end of the day. And there may be multiple versions out there that will work kind of with each other. But what I do know is this can look very different than what we have today. And this is not an easy pivot. It's not an area that's easy to understand. And credit unions aren't just going to be able to one day turn on the switch and say, okay, well, now we're going to deal with tokenized deposits. And yep, now we're going to deal with the central bank digital currency. It's coming faster than they think, and they need to be ready for it. Mm-hmm. Dipping their toes in the water with a buy, sell, hold solution is not necessarily a bad approach. And so, yeah. I think we'll see more of that. I think 2023 will be a good year for building, a good year for getting ready, and understanding that this is a cyclical asset class, just like all other assets. I mean, equities have been down. Gold has been down. I mean, everything outside of probably treasuries at this point have been down. And so when that cycle comes back, do you want to have something for your members, or you want to see those funds go back out to the Coinbases or world? I'd want to have something for my member.
Yeah, it reminds me of the argument about the digital transformation journey, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. It's like, just get started. Just get in on the ground floor, start learning about it, start doing it, start practicing it. And then, like you said, when this thing comes back around, you'll be ready for it and your members will appreciate that for sure. And the value of your credit union will just go sky high. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying, sir. Oh my gosh, Larry, I could talk to you all day about this type of stuff, but I know you have a job to do. But anything else to add here to wrap up?
No, I appreciate the partnership. Always love talking with you. We are super passionate about credit unions in this space. We want to make sure that they are not left behind and that they advance with this new technology. We are seeing that evolution in money, and we want to help to make sure that they partner with sound partners. And that's about the most important thing that they can do. And we're here to help them, obviously.
Right on. Well, great message to end on. Larry, thank you again. Appreciate it, everybody. Larry Pruss from SRM doing his digital assets thing. He's on top of it day in and day out. And we appreciate your time and expertise as always, and look forward to the next chat.
Thank you, Michael.
You are. A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible.
Has there been a point in your journey where you felt like giving up?
Daily, you know, yeah. I mean, but very short-lived. Yeah. I had the curse of you just I couldn't quit.